You know, so as Shanti said, for the next 3 weeks, we're going to be talking about how to be truly well. But to talk about how to be truly well, we really have to talk about energy. We're living in an age of energy. Some of you have attended some of the Ananda classes and have heard that we call this age the age of Dwapara Yuga. It is the age of energy. And we're really just at the very beginning of that age. But at the very beginning of that age, we're beginning to understand that energy, you might say that energy really trumps matter. So it's somehow more important than matter in a certain way, because matter is formed by energy. And we're also understanding that spirituality and science, really including probably most especially the science of healing, the science of medicine, really meet in the study and experience of energy. So we're going to be talking about energy for several weeks in different aspects. So this is sort of, this may be part one, and part two will be next week. I wanted to include this slide. This is a slide that was taken from a lecture that was given at a cancer conference that I attended 2 weeks ago. And presentations at that conference were given by some of the most innovative oncologists and immunologists from around the world. And this particular lecture, as you can see from the slide, was about spirit, mind, body, and cancer. And I was taken by this slide because if you look at this slide, you can see that energy medicine and energy fields and frequency are placed together with quantum physics. So this is a scientist speaking, and that's where those are placed. And underneath that, laughter, meditation, visualization, and contact with nature. So I was really surprised and grateful that they would speak about this in this kind of a conference, because there was also a lot of biochemistry and a lot of physics and that sort of thing at the conference. This is a quotation by Albert Einstein, and he says, "Everything is energy. That's all there is to it. Match the frequency of the reality you want, and you cannot help but get that reality. It can be no other way. This is not philosophy. This is physics." So I want you to remember that, and I'll show it to you again next week, and you'll understand it more and more in the context of some of the slides that we're going to be seeing. So we are beings of energy. That's who we are. We tend to think of ourselves as physical bodies. We're that too. But fundamentally, at our essence, we're beings of energy. And in fact, we're really beings of infinite energy. And we have astonishing capabilities, many of which we don't use. Okay. And not only are we beings of energy, but we live in a sea of energy, in a sea of vibration. And on the very grossest level, you might say, are the very dense vibrations of the physical world. So the earth itself is an entity. It's an energetic entity. It's characterized by its very own energy. This is the earth with its energy fields. So the earth, you, me, the chairs, everything we see, everything we touch, really everything we think, everything we are, is vibratory in nature. So that's the earth, you, every cell of your body, every organism. We are all energy, vibration. So color is vibration, and the different colors have different vibrations. And sound is vibration. And this slide is showing us light, sound, and alpha brainwaves and the correspondences. And I want you to just take note of the, this is a little tiny slide on my screen, of the earth electronic, what does it say here? Yeah, the earth harmonic diameter, but also of something called the Schumann resonance. You may or may not have heard of that, but we're going to talk a little bit about that later in the slideshow. So remember that. Radio frequency waves are vibration. And really, everything in creation has a different rate and a very unique rate of vibration. And all of these vibrations interact with each other, and they affect each other, and they literally shape the nature of our reality. So we're formed by these vibrations. And when these vibrations are in harmony, they're healing. So this is a person sitting in harmonious vibrations. And we can choose to surround ourselves with harmonious vibrations of color and sound and form. And that would promote, that would be one way for us to promote wellness or to promote true health. Or we can allow ourselves to be basically buffeted around by all those vibrational winds that swirl around us. So we have a choice as to what we want to do with that. We can be adversely affected by vibrational circumstances in which we find ourselves, or we can change those vibrational circumstances, whether they be thought or color or sound. We have the ability to change that. So we said before that the Earth has its own unique vibration, and gravity is electromagnetic vibration of the Earth. And so when we connect with the Earth by walking on the Earth, the gravity of the Earth then lowers the vibratory frequencies of our feet and our lower body and grounds us and connects us to that level of vibratory reality, which is the physical reality of the Earth. So you can ground yourself by walking on the Earth. So we'll talk about chakras later, but just as an example, red is the color that's associated with the root chakra. And the vibratory frequencies of the earth element, and the color red are resonant with the qualities that are associated with the root chakra. And these qualities are qualities such as security, steadfastness, groundedness. So both the earth element and the red frequencies, because these frequencies resonate with those mental and emotional qualities, you can promote those qualities and support those qualities, and that would be one example of vibrational healing. If you were a person who was much too flighty, for example, and you wanted to be truly well by grounding yourself, you could walk on the earth, you could wear the color red. So this is the root chakra or the earth chakra. And here's a person walking on the earth. And in naturopathic medicine, we have a practice which we call dew walking, which is walking barefoot on the dewy grass in the morning. And so with this practice, we can intentionally affect the root chakra, and we can ground ourselves. And you could also do this with, just put this slide in, you could do it with being on the ocean, with ocean waiting, or sitting on a beach, and many of you know these two people, or you could ground yourself by being in a cave. That happens to be, that's Sudarshan, for those of you who know Sudarshan. I saw that picture on Facebook the other day. I said, I've got to have that. That is just too good. But there's a difference to being in a cave, and you can ground yourself with granite, as it were. So, you know, you could be in the steam of a volcano. There are many ways that you can expose yourself to the elements, and this affects your energetic reality and who you are and how you function on the earth. So we can promote a healing of a human being or of an animal or of a plant by attuning to the elements of earth, air, water, fire, ether. If we attune to those elements, and all of those elements are associated with specific chakras and with colors and with qualities of consciousness. And over the coming weeks, we'll be more specific about that. So here's Yogananda walking in attunement with the elements. And you can see that he's with the earth and the air and the fire of sunlight. We can also enhance our wellness through the use of color. This is the Holi festival in India. So color is a manifestation of light. So color is a manifestation of light. And again, through some of the, if you've taken classes at Ananda, you may have heard about the eight aspects through which you might experience God. And in fact, there's a class on the eight aspects that's going to be happening in June. So if you haven't heard about it, you can attend that class and hear more. But light is one of those eight aspects, and you can see light and sound and love and calmness and peace and joy, and all of these are aspects through which you can experience God. So we can do that with color. And Yogananda spoke about shining lights through yellow quartz glass, and that would be, he called it a spiritual nutriment. And I was really just totally fascinated by this idea, and so I actually set out to buy myself some quartz glass. And I had my husband build this little room over in our, we have a small retreat center over in Hawaii, and we built this room. And we looked and looked and looked for the quartz glass, couldn't find it, so this is looking out the far window. So we surrounded the room with clear glass, and then we got ourselves a theater light and panes of glass, and we started playing with the effect of the different colors on our physical bodies and our consciousness. So if you're agitated, you know, you might sit in a green color or a blue color. Or if you wanted more energy, you might sit in a broadcast a red color. And this is actually a science. And this is Isaac Newton. And so the basis for that scientific explanation of modern-day color therapy came from Sir Isaac Newton. And he discovered spectrum analysis, and he lived from the late 1600s to the early 1700s. This is not a new science. This is a stamp commemorating that. And this man is perhaps well known, not as well known as Newton, obviously, but his name is Niels Svensson. And in the early 1900s, the Nobel Prize for Medicine was given to this man, and the prize was for his research in the area of color therapy. Which is sort of amazing. So he proved that colors are independent energies and that specific color vibrations cause different reactions in the human body and in the psyche as well. You know, so seeing red, your reactions are faster than if you see purple, for example. So you know that you experience this, so the color red, and it's not shining out brightly to you right now, but if you're sitting in the vibration of red or blue or orange, the feeling is very different, the feeling that you get. The vibration of the color is changing your vibration. So this is a cape of many colors. We all have the experience of needing to wear or surround ourselves with different colors. Here's a little chart here. So the ancient Egyptian healers advocated wearing specific colors to cure mental and physical ailments. And in more recent times, Dr. Max Luscher investigated color preferences, and he found that a person's specific preferences or dislike for a color reflected existing states of mind, but also of hormonal balance of your glands. And so this little chart tells you some of the things that these colors are used for. Green supports balance, harmony, love, communication, and so forth. And this one talks about, this is a color healing chart, and there are many, many books that you can get that describe this in great detail, but this gives indications of colors used to heal various physical conditions. So we have states of consciousness, and we also have physical conditions that can be treated through color, and there are many, many ways to do this. There are little acupuncture devices that are colored laser lights that you can use on acupuncture points, or you can broadcast colors, or you can wear colors. And these are red boots. And you think about, what do red boots do for you? What is your consciousness? It is a very different thing to walk into a room wearing a pair of red boots than to walk in the room wearing a pair of brown boots or black boots. It does something. And wearing red on your lower body is very different than wearing red on your upper body. And these are very simple things that actually can profoundly affect your experience of reality. So what about red slippers? So this is how Dorothy changed her reality. You know, when she clicks her heels together in The Wizard of Oz, she's not wearing anything but red. She's trying to make something happen. These are just colored markers, but we can see that in children, we get behavioral changes in children when they wear different colored clothing, and even when they write with different colored markers, you can see an increase in their reading fluency and in their comprehension and their recall. So color is one of those waveforms that affects us and offers us an avenue of healing ourselves through the use of energy. These are city lights at night. So in modern times, and especially in Silicon Valley, we really live in a sea of vibration, of electromagnetic vibration. And it's an invisible smog, really, that's affecting us all the time. Here you can see that smog surrounding us from all of these different things, from Wi-Fi to cell phones to communication towers and, you know, all those different kinds of things. And many people believe that these energy fields that we're exposed to via all of our technology and wireless networks are responsible for some of the very weird and complex disease constellations that are surfacing these days. It's much different than it was 20 years ago, really. And there are many other people who believe that all of this, what I would call electromagnetic contamination, in some way facilitates higher consciousness. Well, I don't know about that, but whichever way it is, there's this evolution of the understanding that our health is really affected by vibrations in ways that we never before imagined. And we know that those vibrational fields affect everything from cell-to-cell communication to cellular membranes to even DNA. So there's something we need to do about that. But we find, you know, we find that we are in no way separable then from any aspect of our vibrational universe, whether it's sound, whether it's thought, whether it's electromagnetic energy. We are all affected by that. And we're also not separate from each other. So the thoughts that I have may affect the thoughts that you have. That is an energetic reality. So energy is in us, it's around us, it patterns our physical existence. And thought, or consciousness itself, is a vibration of energy. And it is that vibration that creates the universe and guides the universe. So this is two vibrational fields interacting. Just to illustrate, again, this was from the cancer conference. And it's showing that what each of us chooses in our consciousness affects everybody around us all the time. So you're affected by the company that you keep. This is Yogananda in meditation on the infinite. And I don't have a study on what happens to the people who sat around Yogananda, but in fact there are studies done with transcendental meditators, and they find that if you have a group of people meditating in a room, that the serotonin levels in the people for blocks around that room are changed by those people's meditation. So of course the person that's meditating is also changed, but so is everyone else. So the consciousness of each one of us is represented by a unique vibrational signature. So my vibration is different than your vibration. We're all different in that way. And, you know, that's why we speak about good vibes and bad vibes, because we feel it. We experience the vibration that is the consciousness that's carried by an individual or by a group of individuals or by a place or even by a thing. I just like this. Music in the soul can be heard by the universe. Impact of those people who emanate these beautiful vibrations really changes the world around us. This is a slide. Years ago, I traveled in Sri Lanka, and there was a festival called the Petaheta Festival in Kandy in Sri Lanka. And they have this festival every year. And in this festival, there is just this great parade of elephants, and they're bedecked with jewels and lights and beautiful fabrics. And it's all in honor of the Buddha's tooth. You know, so there's one elephant that is particularly gorgeous and has this great altar on it, and it's the Buddha's tooth. You know, and at the time I saw that, I said, what are these guys doing? This is a tooth, Buddha's tooth. They think it's a Buddha's tooth. And I thought, what is it? Well, the fact of the matter is that Buddha's tooth carries the vibration of Buddha. And so we cherish all of those objects and those places through which we can share in the vibration of a great healer or a great master. So, for example, we visit places where masters have lived. This is Master's room in India. So we visit those places. This is Lahiri Mahashaya's ashram, and I'm sure Ashanti will point some of these teachers out to you later in the class. This is the door to his ashram. This is Babaji's cave. So all of these places are places where the masters have lived and taught, and they continue to carry the vibration of the masters. And here within, in our own church, this would be the reason why you might see these happen to be from Swami Kriyananda, his slippers and that sort of thing. And it is because we can experience and share in that vibration and receive a type of vibratory healing from those things. In fact, when we attune to any master or healer whose consciousness is a higher vibration than our own, we can begin to resonate with that vibration. And by that resonance, we can begin to transform our consciousness. This is a form of energy healing. If you are feeling not well and you sit in front of the picture of a master, you can actually receive a vibration that will help you move towards wellness. This is another teacher, Swami Kriyananda. You know, and I mean, even just in the picture, you know, you look at the picture and you can see a consciousness emanating from that picture, and you start to partake in that a little bit. This happens to be a man by the name of John Bastier. He was the man who founded the medical school that I attended, and he was a very great healer and a very great man, and he was quite old when I was in medical school, but he would occasionally come to teach classes, and we would be quite awed by his presence. And sometimes we would interview patients who had been his patients for many years. And these patients would say to us, you know, I was feeling so terrible, and I entered the room with Dr. Bastier, and Dr. Bastier would just put his hand on my hand, or he would put his hand on my shoulder, and I would forget what my problem was because he was transferring this energy to the patient. Now, you know, vibrational healing is really not limited to enlightened masters. Dr. Bastier could do it for his patients. We can do it for each other. It's a way that we work with healing. We talk about satsang, and satsang being a community of truth or a community of people who are gathering together. And this is Ananda. This is an Ananda Easter picture, I think. And that sharing with like-minded souls in spiritual community, that is a form of vibrational healing. That's why we do it. It is much more uplifting and healing to be at East West Bookstore or to sit in this church than to go to a rock concert. You know, you get a different kind of consciousness from doing that. So this is why we do satsang. You know, at the cancer conference that I attended, the point was made at the cancer conference that we cannot heal unless we align ourselves with people of a higher vibration than we are. And again, I just found it so stunning that these topics would come up at that particular type of a conference. This is a classic book on vibrational medicine by Richard Gerber. I think it's in its third or fourth edition now. And so technically, when we talk about vibrational healing or energy healing, we're talking about healing the body through working directly with vibration rather than working with physical medicine such as surgery or pharmaceutical medicine, something like that. So vibrational medicine, we could describe vibrational medicine as healing at a more subtle or higher frequency vibration than the vibration of the physical body. And subtle often refers to that which is unseen, right? And in terms of the body, we may be referring to what we call the astral body or the causal body. So again, those of you who've taken some classes here might have heard those terms before. We have these three bodies, the physical body, the astral body, and the causal body. And they comprise, these bodies exist simultaneously in the same space, so they're not separate from one another. And they comprise what we might call the human multidimensional anatomy. It's one word that is used. And you can visualize these bodies as being superimposed on each other. And the chakras are connecting points between these bodies. And here's another picture. And this one actually, I think, shows only those three bodies. So astral body is the body of light or energy. And the causal body is the body of consciousness or thought or mind or idea. And the causal body is where everything begins. It begins in consciousness. And that is translated through the astral body, which is the body of energy, into the physical body. That's how we get physical reality. And if we were to make a fundamental change in our physical bodies or in the physical world, we would first conceptualize it, and then we would work through energy to make that happen. This is a picture of a leaf, and this is a picture taken through Kirlin photography. You look at this leaf and you think another way to say this is that you see that patterning there, that physical form really coalesces around energetic patterning. That's what happens. So the energetic pattern carries information, and that information guides the cellular growth of physical structure. That is what happens. So any disturbance or distortion in the energy pattern is going to result in a disruption in the physical body. So when your energy pattern is disrupted, you're going to get a change in your physical body, and you're not going to be well. Something's going to happen. And, you can temporarily heal the physical body with physical medicine, but if the energetic patterning is off, the body will just revert to the pattern. So you can correct it, and it reverts right back again. So this Kirlian photography is really interesting. It's a kind of electrophotography, and it reveals the energetic nature of reality. And this isn't a great picture, but there's a great understanding behind that, and that is that though part of the physical leaf is gone, the structure is still there. The energetic structure is still there. So if you take a Kirlian photograph of a bud, you can see the leaf that the bud is to become. Now, that's the slide I wanted to show you, and I just have searched and searched. I saw that. I've seen that over the past, and I just couldn't find exactly that slide. But that's amazing. You take a picture of a bud, and you see a leaf. That just says it all, really. Here's a star fruit. And you want to remember that the physical structure is patterned by the light. So the light is the cause, the physical manifestation is the effect. So this slide is fingertips, somebody's fingertips. So with a Kirlian photograph of fingertips, you can get diagnostic information. For example, you can diagnose cystic fibrosis off the energetic pattern of the fingertips. You can also see emotional states like anger and, that sort of thing. Here's another picture of fingertips. So we had this one, and now we have this one. Here they are side by side. So one of the one on the left is the photo before a Reiki healing session, an energy healing session. And the one on the right is after the session, so that you can see that just by that energy healing, the pattern is changed. The energetic patterning is changed. Here's another fun one. So this is a comparison of a commercially grown sprout compared to an organic sprout taken with Kirlian photography. That would be why you might want to eat organic foods to be well. It's not just that they're more nutritious in terms of their vitamin and mineral content. It's because they're a fundamentally different thing. And you would find the same thing if you took a Kirlian photograph of of a food that you had not prayed over and a food you had prayed over, you would get the same kind of difference going. So we have this multidimensional energy field that we think of as ourselves, and within that we find these whirling vortices of subtle energies, which we call the chakras. That's a Sanskrit word which means wheel. We're going to really focus on the chakras not next week, but the next week. So this is just a little teaser here. So here they are today, and I'm just mentioning them in a passing way to give you the context for the discussion. We're going to, like I said, spend a whole week on these in a couple of weeks. In the Sufi tradition, the chakras are called the latifas. And I like that because latifa translates as subtle ones. And vibrational healing is subtle healing. This is a picture of the Buddha. And I put him on because you can see that little circle on his hand. When you see that, it's always an energy. So it's a minor chakra is what it is. And a concentration of energy. There it is again. And this picture shows a number of minor chakras. You can see the major chakras lining up in the body, but they're showing other little energy centers around the body too. We use that in healing. We're not really going to spend much time on that in this class. But so this is what a person's energy field might look like. And there really have always been individuals who can directly perceive the nature of inner and outer energy realities in sound or in color or in light. I don't happen to be one of them, but there are many of those people. And their perceptions reflect a very consistent reality. And by consistent, I mean, you know, it's not that this person experienced one thing and that person experiences another thing, but Eastern yogis and Western clairvoyants and mystics and healers, they all agree that this is the type of energy field that we are and that they see. Sort of much more recently, we find that we can detect and measure aspects of these realities through various instruments. Now, this is an older picture, but they demonstrated some of the newer instruments again at that cancer conference in Reno that I attended last week. But these instruments really are the modalities of one of the medicines of our developing future. You know, they're often called black box technologies, but I think it's just that we're at the beginning of this age of energy, and so we have Model Ts instead of, you know, what, Porsches. But later we'll have something like that. This vibrational medicine balancing energy fields, this book was written by a cardiologist who was a cardiac surgeon, and so he found that the surgery that he did simply removed the effect of another cause, and his patients had to seek treatment again and again. He was quite dissatisfied with that, so he moved into another field, which was the field of vibrational medicine, and he provided great detail to things such as how is it that the earth, what does that vibrational field of the earth that we talked about do to the human body? How does it change the heart rate? What does it do? And he quantified that. These are two scientists. To the left is both Japanese, Emoto Sensei. And we're going to show you a lot of pictures from Emoto Sensei's work next week. And the man on the right is a man by the name of Hiroshi Motoyama. And what Motoyama was is a yogi. He's a Japanese yogi and a researcher. And what he did was he measured the emissions of energy coming from the chakras and from the acupuncture meridians and from the organs of the body. And he measured these in the form of light and electricity and electromagnetic energy. And he designed this little machine, which is called the AMI machine. The AMI machine is the apparatus for measuring the functional conditions of the meridians and corresponding internal organs. That's why they call it an AMI machine. It's just a mouthful. But he validated the relationship of the chakras to the organs and the glands and the nerves in the body. And his instrument has been in use in clinics throughout the world for many years now. I happened to meet this man when I lived in Japan in the late 70s. You know, so these machines have been around for a long time, and people are getting very good clinical effect from them. So here's the seven major chakras and some of the correspondences of those chakras and their connections with color and that sort of thing. So when we'll go to that later. I'm going to skip that for a minute and go to this. This is a machine called a Rife machine that some of you may have heard about, and it's a frequency generator. And specific frequencies counteract viral and other disease frequencies. So really, how does this work? Here's the little frequency table. And what this is saying is that living tissue generates energy. So it's just as every chakra and every gland and every organ and every tissue in the body vibrates at its own unique rate, so do microorganisms. And so these vibrations can be detected and measured, and they're affected by external vibrations, such as the vibrations of color or sound or thought or just a generated vibration. And the Rife machine is based on this understanding. And this machine was used many years ago. This is an old newspaper article, "Dread Disease Germs Destroyed by Rays," claim of scientists. And so, you know, if you have a microorganism that's vibrating like this, and you feed back into it its opposite wave, it flatlines the wave, and the microorganism dies. And he discovered this many, many years ago. But you know, we weren't really in the age of energy at that time, and didn't have the technology to be as precise about it as we're beginning to be. So in that early slide we saw, before some of you came in, I said, note the Schumann resonance. Here's a Schumann resonance. And that's a frequency of about 7.83 cycles per second. And that resonance is characteristic of the brain waves of mystics and the magnetic field generated by the Earth at power points such as the pyramids. So here's a pyramid with a mystic. But harmonics of this frequency heal people. And again, therapies are being developed on this frequency. And I'm really wanting to emphasize to you sort of the science behind the energy today. We're not talking about fantasy here. We're talking about predictable scientific reality. But it is the science of energy, and we're newcomers to this science, really, relatively speaking. So when we speak about vibrational or energy medicines, we're also speaking about therapies that are less technology intense. And so along with color therapies and that we've briefly mentioned today, and hand healing, there's homeopathy, and there are flower essences, and there are gem essences, and there are gem elixirs, and color therapy, and light therapy, and acupuncture, and acupressure, and sound healing, and all of these are forms of vibrational healing, and things that we're confronted with every day, that if we know a little bit about them, we can make changes in what we're influenced by, and what we choose to be influenced by, or how we want to feel, and what we want to do with those things. This is another picture of Yogananda, and Yogananda speaks about, he uses the term vibratory healing, and I always found that interesting. He doesn't say vibrational healing, he says vibratory healing. And vibratory healing makes use of sound, language, and consciousness itself. So when we talk next week, we're going to continue by taking a much deeper look at vibratory healing and how it is that we can move towards being truly well through the use of both energy medicines that are less technologically intense than those things that we just discussed today, and also through vibratory healing. So this is the last slide for today. So it's an introduction, and part two is next week, and it starts at 6 o'clock. If you can be here by that time, we'll review some of what some of you might have missed today, but we'll be talking much more about the sound, thought, and consciousness ways of healing. So consciousness as manifest by thought or prayer or affirmation or chanting sound, those kinds of things. When we talk about vibrational healing, in the typical sense, it's all those things that I just said to you. But, you know, I mean, Yogananda was not talking about the machines and those kinds of things. So that's the next step. So it, I don't know if it's really a distinction or not, but I like the distinction. I like that term vibratory healing because I can make a distinction with it. Well, it just touches on things. And Shanti says we teach classes that are 8 weeks long, and then we try to sort of bring it down into a little bit of a summary. But I'm glad. Yeah, thank you. I hope so. But I mean, if we say that that's the frequency that are emanated by mystics, maybe there are more mystics on the planet now that are generating that. You know, I think that the more that people are doing those kinds of things, the more that it would increase. Where did you hear that? That's fascinating. Yeah, I'm sorry. So he said that he had heard that that frequency was increasing, the Schumann frequency, and you said that he had read that in a scientific study, and you had seen it from Japan. I wouldn't be surprised. And this research that I was showing you, Motoyama Sensei, he's had an institute there since the early 70s, where they've been looking at these kinds of vibrations. And I know that there's study being done in this country as well, and you may be able to maybe Google it and find out a little bit more. How do they measure it? Like I said, technology is not my big friend, and so I would not be a person that could tell you exactly how they measure the frequency. I don't know how they measure any of these frequencies, really. You know, I mean, how do they measure the frequency of color? I'll have to say there are ways, and I don't know those ways because it's not my... I'm more interested in the frequency itself than how they were able to discern that. But it's a very good question.
I'm hoping in the second part of this class I'm going to speak to you about energy, but in a very different way.
Yeah.
And its relevance to wellness of body, mind, and soul, and also our spiritual paths. I mean, those are inseparable. Wellness really has to do with how we grow spiritually. But I only want to say this, in a certain way, was a really highly advanced talk. I love this talk, but it was really, a talk that one should hear over and over, I think, in the long run. But what I'm hoping is that after I speak later, if some of you have any more questions for Connie, because some of this will... I'm going to hold it up in a different light for you. And Connie will be here, and she'll be able to answer even more questions, because what she put in front of us, as Mirella just said, was absolutely a brilliant synopsis of the energy that we're living in, but by and large, for most of us, unconsciously. And this talk is about what happens if we really try and pay attention and get conscious of why we're living the way we're living, why we think certain thoughts, why we feel certain things, why do we react to certain people or food or places. And once we see that, then how can we use that awareness? So in a way, it's because the slideshow came first that you might not have that container to put it in, but it was a remarkable explanation of what I'll be talking about next. So, I mean, in a way, the pictures were. So I just want to say, hold on to as much of this as you can, and then if you have questions later, Connie will be here to answer more of them.
And we'll review next. It'll make more and more sense as the weeks go on as well, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm saying this most in large part because there are a lot of you here that I don't know, which is unusual. I'm not used to not knowing anybody at Ananda, and suddenly there's, a third of a room full of people that I've never seen, so I have no idea what a lot of your backgrounds are or why you're here, and maybe we can, when we come back, or even over dinner, maybe we can just hear a little bit about who you are and what you were hoping to get out of this class and what your background is with and spirituality and energy. But that'll hopefully all come out in the 4 weeks. So let's go over. We now at this time in these 6 to 9 classes, as I said earlier, we have a potluck dinner. If you did not bring food tonight or you cannot bring food ever, please don't worry about it. Very often somebody brings a lot of food and there's plenty for all of us, or we share what there is. And more than anything, it's a time for us to just sit down and get to know each other and talk amongst ourselves rather than you just being here listening, so we can really get to know each other more than we might in a regular classroom setting. So please join us. You can follow us or over to the booking gift shop where you register. So I started to say earlier, my name is Shanti Rubinstone. I think most of you know that, but there's a lot of faces in here tonight that I don't know. So I'm going to back up now and just do a moment or two of introduction. Obviously, Connie and I are both teachers here. Connie is a naturopathic physician. I'm a medical doctor. Connie, when I first moved into the community itself, which is now 13, 14 years ago, I'm having trouble remembering, but some number of years ago, Asha called me and said, there's a woman who wants to ask you a question. And I'll just share this. This has nothing to do with tonight, but it's comical anyway. Is that I had just left a position of having the third largest medical practice in the entire United States and teaching at Johns Hopkins and like that. So I was in the world, a lot of teaching, just a fairly big presence. And when I left, I'd moved to Baltimore for a few years, and it took me about 3 years to realize it was a huge mistake for me, and then 2 more to extricate myself from it, because I just needed to be in California. I mean, the truth is, I needed to be here with Ananda. It wasn't all that totally clear to me at the time, but it doesn't matter. When I left there, I put everything I knew in storage, and I lived off of this little bit of money that I had saved in a cash way, and tried to spend the better part of a year not seeing anybody, which I did. I lived out of my little Jetta with no stove, no nothing, just like bread, cheese. Anyway, it was a very fun and profound year. But I'm telling you this because when I came back, I immediately moved into the Ananda community. I had been involved with Ananda since 1978. And so there I was, sort of scrounging for furniture off the streets because everything I owned was in storage. One day there was a beautiful white leather couch and I'm dragging it into my apartment. It was an embarrassing place. And Asha calls me and says, there's a woman I'd like you to meet and she has a question she wants to ask you. I said, just sort of send her over. So Connie walked in and I'm telling you this because anybody else would have turned and run screaming from the room like, this is a physician. I mean, I had this stuff from the streets. It was really something. But I think, honestly, within 2 minutes, we knew that we knew each other. It was an extraordinary reconnecting, although we had never met on this physical plane or in this life before. And just immediately decided that we were going to work together and be together. Not easy for a naturopath and an internist. But what we very quickly came to see, and this is relevant to this class, is that Connie and I do exactly the same kind of work. We treat people exactly the same way, but it's like Divine Mother set us up with different turnstiles. So people come to her when they think they want one thing, naturopathic medicine. They come to me when they think they want something else, which long ago quit being internal medicine. That also is not important, and it doesn't matter. But they're drawn to me for a certain reason. But the truth is, she and I have always known that once we're with people, we're doing the same thing. And really, in essence, what we're doing and what I hope to be able to explain to you over the next 4 weeks is what, and I think Connie coined this phrase, if I'm not mistaken, but it's perfect. I call my practice transformational medicine. So helping people literally transform their lives, in the words of Paramahansa Yogananda, look at things that we would once consider obstacles and turn them into opportunities to grow. So my practice and my business cards do say transformational medicine. Connie's do not say that, but in essence, that's what she's doing too. And other than the fact that she has an unfair benefit because, you know, very often when people come to you, an unfair advantage, people come to any doctor, by and large, they want you to give them something to make them feel better. People like leaving the doctor's office with something. And I very quickly learned, although I prescribe a lot of medicines, I'm not at all against medicines. I'm not for or against anything. I'm exactly for whatever it is. This is not about me now. This is about the class. Whatever it is that you need to take your next step towards wellness, that's what I'm for. So when somebody comes to see Connie or me, and probably many other people in the world, you're coming in front of somebody who's going to sit and be with you and know you. We might know you by spending an hour and a half the first visit, asking a lot of questions, but we also know you the way you all get to know people. We notice how people dress. We notice how they hold themselves. We notice how they speak. We hear the words they tell us, not the words, but how they choose to express themselves. We ask questions like, do you have anything to do in your life with religion or spirituality? How's your relationship with your partner? How's sex for you? Are you two getting along in all these ways? How are the kids doing? Because we know that we couldn't possibly begin to treat anybody without knowing all of that about them. Now, the advantage that Connie has is that Connie uses natural medicine. So she could always write or say to somebody, here, take a little bit of this flower essence. And by the way, let's put an affirmation with it. Or here's some herb that's going to be perfect or some natural medicine. None of it's ever going to hurt anybody. You know, whereas I'm writing prescriptions for antibiotics, chemotherapy, you know, you have to be a little more. I can't always give somebody something, not in that way. So I very quickly learned to write prescriptions for things that I knew would help people take their next step towards wellness. And who knows what that is? That varies for every person. It may be that somebody comes to see me who loves doing art, but they got married, they became a mother, they've devoted themselves to their family, the kids are still growing up, the husband needs them, maybe they're also working, and they haven't been able to do their art. And they come to me because they're in pain. And that pain might look like anything. It could be a stomach ache. It could be a headache. It could be back pain. It could be a chronic cough that nobody's diagnosed. It can be a cancer. And I don't want to oversimplify this. I mean, Connie spoke beautifully to it, and I'm going to keep alluding to some of that. But the absolute truth is every single illness, every illness, every dis-ease has to do with us being out of tune with our natural vibration, with the essence of who we are. It would be virtually impossible, other than for the masters, and this, I'm going to just say the sentence but not explain it right now, but these people, when I say the masters, I mean Jesus, Krishna, Buddha, these masters behind me, who I'm going to stop in a minute and tell some of you about, these masters who literally take on other people's karma for various reasons. So, Master died when he died in 1952. Was he 52 years old when he died? I'm thinking, pardon me? 50. Whatever he was in his 50s. So he died. That's pretty young. But it didn't have to do with his being out of tune with anything. So making an exception for the masters, for most of us, the more closely we can live in harmony with the essence of who we really are, and I hope to be able to help make that make more sense, right? So it's living harmoniously with a certain vibration, or when we're out of harmony with. Harmoniously, no illness. We're sitting still, We're sitting right in our very center, which means in that astral spine where those energetic vortices that we call chakras live. Again, all to be explained more. When we're resting there, when we are, how the phrase got coined in the 60s, centered. You know, we always thought that meant calm, relaxed, but it was actually a brilliant phrase for meaning get into your astral spine, go right to the very center of who you are. Just like it is impossible to have your heart wide open and feel deep love and also hate in the same moment. They are mutually exclusive. They're different vibrations, different energies. Love is an antidote. Calmness is an antidote to fear. So just as that's true, when we are, the finer our vibration is, the less we do this, right, from one extreme to the other, because everything energetically has to come back to zero. I'm going to talk more about this, but I'm just laying this all out for you. This is where illness is. I was with a patient today in my office, and she was, I've been seeing this woman for probably 2.5 to 3 years now. She came to see me. She walked into a class. I don't remember what the class was about, several years ago. At the end of the class, came up to me, very sweetly said to me, "Look, for whatever it's worth, money is no object. What do I need to do to see you?" It was very sweet. I've been seeing her ever since. She was in the midst of a really painful, you know, this like just finding out your husband's been having an affair, and in fact, he's been having many affairs, and just her life was in a total state of upheaval. And as we started being together, very gently, but from the very beginning almost, I would say things to her. I'm just going to say it to you, but I was very mindful about how I put it out because I didn't want her to have to shut down to take care of herself around me. I didn't want her to have to leave because she couldn't, because I was speaking something that wasn't the truth to her. But I basically said to her, as you heal, or we will know you are healing when you can actually hold this man in a loving place. And it was just unimaginable to her. She was so filled with rage. And it's interesting, I think she more than almost anybody I've ever worked with, I felt like I really saw what happens to a family when, or at least in certain instances, let me say in this instance, let me be much more specific. I felt the extraordinary pain in this family of being ripped apart the way they were and what the daughter had to lose and the in-laws and on and on. Today, almost 3 years later, she came in to see me. So we've gone from seeing each other every week to every 2 weeks, to every 3 weeks. Now the last couple of months we see each other once a month. And she came in and she was just glowing. She looked stunningly beautiful. And I said to her, "What's happening?" And she said, "I don't know." She said, "But I just, all of that fear that I've been talking to you about, all of that incredible angst, it's just gone. It's just gone." She said, "I want to try and understand what took it away." And I said to her, "You know, for almost 3 years, you've learned to meditate. You've been meditating. You read something from the Bhagavad Gita every night. You go to all these different classes. You're at service a fair amount. Your whole life has changed. The way everything, the way that you think about anything has changed. It's not one thing. You've been growing towards that for 3 years. And then suddenly one day we wake up and we say, I'm in a new place. I feel it now." As many of you have heard me say, you suddenly realize that you feel calm in the face of something that maybe even last week or 2 months ago or certainly 3 years ago you couldn't have imagined. And she said to me, "I know you've been telling me this," she said, "but I'm telling you, I feel nothing but love for him." And it just, I started to cry. She wasn't crying, but I was crying, you know, because healing is like that. When you talk about wellness, This is what we're talking about. We're not talking about whether or not our physical diseases go away or not. Maybe they will as we grow spiritually, and maybe they won't. There's no way to ever know that. Quite frankly, very often they do. But even if they don't, the being that you have become, who can now cope with that, who can realize it as an opportunity to keep growing, or maybe it's still work for you, but you don't shy away from the work. Maybe you have to live with chronic pain. I'm not going to stand up here and say that's ever wonderful. I've helped hundreds of people die of different diseases. But some people die well or in a state of wellness. Wellness is an attitude that needs to be cultivated. It's a state of mind. It happens much more, not just in our minds, but with mind and soul, than anything that has to do with our body. We can meet two or three or sometimes five people in the course of a day who have the exact same thing. Call it what you want. Chronic headaches, chronic back pain, cancers that they're dealing with, pneumonia, partners that aren't treating them well, children who are in trouble, houses that just burn down, whatever it is that happens, whatever that circumstance is, if you sit down with three or four or five people, everybody's dealing with it a little differently. It means something different to everybody. So what makes us well or not is not what's going on external to us, no matter how dear it is to us. Several of my friends have had children who are addicts or alcoholics who have wound up on the streets or in jail for various periods of time or stealing from them or worse yet, committing felonies outside or worse yet, killing somebody. So I'm talking about whatever it is. Whatever it is. That is not what makes us sick or keeps us sick. That is not what defines us. When it defines us, we're not well. When we can begin to allow ourselves to change in ways that show us how to live with whatever it is, even when it's that painful. Does the pain disappear? No. But everything about how we hold it changes. And moving from where many of us are now to that place where we can become more and more and more accepting of what is and see it as ours, not as if some mistake happened to us. I remember a story that some of you have heard me tell, that one of the teachers up in Ananda Village told. He taught it as a visualization in a class that he taught. His name is Bharat, and he's just a lovely soul, and almost everything that comes through him feels like this kind of wisdom. But he said, the next time that you're faced in your life with a situation that you think, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me, is how many of us ask. Or that if you do like I do every once in a while, where I sort of look to God and I say, really? Are you sure? Like, this belongs to me? He said, imagine you see a figure walking to you. And he did say, a beautiful woman. He said, imagine her in whatever ways you imagine, the most magnificent being that you can conjure up. And he said, many of you will imagine somebody with long blonde hair and in flowing blue or purple robes. And he said, and she's carrying something as she moves towards you. And as she gets closer, you can now see her eyes that are beautiful, deep blue eyes. And she's looking at you with all of the love that you could ever imagine coming your way. You feel loved by her. And she's just walking in a regal way towards you. And as you get closer, you see that what she's holding is a solid gold, beautiful platter. And then when she gets right near you and is offering this platter to you with unimaginable love on the platter, imagine exactly what you thought didn't belong in your life. It was so beautiful. There's never a mistake about what happens in our life. Never a mistake. It is a scientific impossibility. This is what Connie was saying to us before. Now I'm going to go back, and I want to start where Connie started. But remember what I'm saying to you now. Nothing can happen in your life that doesn't provide you with a perfect opportunity to learn and to grow spiritually. And we're starting this class with the assumption that the whole purpose of life, that we're all in the assumption that we're all on the same page, but with the truth that the purpose of life, of every life, is to give us an opportunity to grow spiritually. There's no other real reason why we're here, even though we forget that. And we get sidetracked, confused, drawn, magnetized, right? Hypnotized by whatever. Wanting to do well in school, wanting to go to Stanford Medical School and become a great physician, wanting to have the perfect children, find the perfect partner, get the perfect house, get all the shoes that we love, all the clothes. Doesn't matter. I don't even want to say it with sarcasm in my voice because all of that is totally fine. What's wrong, of course, is that we expect that's what's bringing us our happiness. So we all spend all of our lives looking outside of ourselves for these things. We do. Now, I'm preaching to a little bit of the choir because you're all here. You all came to a class at the Ananda Church of Self-Realization that was called How to Be Truly Well. So something drew you all here. So we are blessed in being that small percentage of people who has a kind of awareness that the vast majority of people still on this earth do not, and I'm aware of that. But I would say it's probably true for most of us. I'll speak for myself. We're still magnetized and hypnotized and drawn towards a lot of things that are outside of ourselves. That doesn't change the truth. Whether we know the truth or not in any given moment doesn't change it. Connie's husband used to, once a week or once a day, I think, for a while, send out these beautiful sayings, which you could tell he just put so much energy into finding them. This is one that he sent several years ago, but it just rang, many of them did, but it rang so true for me that I kept it. It says, "It is the commonest of mistakes to consider that the limit of our power of perception is also the limit of all there is to perceive." This is so extraordinary. "It is the commonest of mistakes to consider that the limit of our power of perception is also the limit of all there is to perceive." And we get caught in that, all of us. So I said just a second ago, truth exists whether we see it or not. If you're in San Francisco today and you're in a fog bank, it doesn't mean the sun's not shining. The sun's shining the same whether you can see it or not. If you happen to be somebody who lives in a home without a radio or a television or any type of a receiver, does that mean that, you know, the ball games aren't being played in San Francisco? Of course not. The ball games are being played. You just don't have any way to receive them. And we get fooled. And it sounds silly, but if you pull people out of some tiny little village in, there are less and less third world countries anymore, but there are still some of those little villages in third world countries. You know, a while ago there was, I forget how I saw this. I saw some little documentary or short. Maybe many of you did too. They brought some young men who were in this colony in Africa where older men had taken in all of these orphans, thousands of orphans, and they were taking care of them and raising them. I mean, they were living, very simply doesn't quite say it, but at least they were providing a home and they were providing camaraderie and a sense of family and community and food. But somebody wanted to, I don't know why, I can't remember the premise of it, but they brought several of these men to the United States. And they put them in apartments, and they took them shopping. And, you know, you could see them. They would look at a water fountain or at the sink, and they'd be like, what is this? Or a cabinet. Everything. They had never seen anything. They had lived in the fields in tents, and they had no way of seeing any of what we have. And you really see how limited your perception of reality is by what you've been exposed to. Nothing more than that. It's remarkable. If you travel a lot, you know it. Well, if we try and distill that into what Connie was saying to us, we are energy. Nothing in the world exists, nothing that isn't pure energy, because everything comes into being originally, literally, by superconsciousness. We call that God. We call it Divine Mother. Some people call it angels. Some people call it a higher power. Call it whatever you want. It doesn't matter. There was existence, a unified form of existence. As soon as any thought was put from that force, energy, out, it came out in a vibratory wave. And this is what Connie was saying, remember? Everything has its own vibration. This is essential. People who have come to my classes before know you hear me talk about it in every class, in almost every Sunday sermon, because it's the essence of the spiritual path. You can't move forward and talk about growing spiritually, which you could say equals being well, because it does. That's what we're here to talk about. Wellness is about spiritual growth. It's not about anything else. That's why my patient could come to me 3 years later and say, I'm holding him in pure love. And it just reduced me to tears. That's wellness. That's all the spiritual growth that she's done in 3 years. And 3 years ago, she was saying to me, but how am I going to love him? How am I going to open my heart? Tell me how to do this. Give me the medicine. Give me the way. Give me something. Fix me. I said to her, just rest. Breathe. Read a little bit of the Bhagavad Gita every day. Follow your breath. Learn to meditate. Just listen to some chanting. But I want to be well now. I want you to make things. Breathe. You know, we're all like that. I mean, I'm holding it up for you. This is an extremely bright, well-educated, highly successful, extraordinarily wealthy, sophisticated, worldly woman. Just like us. But that's how we get. How am I going to get fixed? And by the way, can I do it right now? But we're all on a path. So as soon as we understand these very basics, we are energy. We are in essence a thought of the divine. Really, in essence. I'm using that literally, not figuratively the way it's often used, like, well, in essence, this is... No. At our essence, we are a thought of the divine that's been manifested out by putting energy into vibration. So each one of us is vibrating at our own frequency. But you see, so is everything else in the world. So is the chair you're sitting on. So is the water you drink. And here's where it gets difficult. Not just the things. It's very easy even to imagine that. Even if I say to you, like I always say, the only reason you can sit on that chair and not fall through it is because you believe you're separate from it. And by that very belief, you're vibrating at one frequency, it's vibrating at another. And because they're different vibrations, they manifest physically differently in the world. So this is separate from me because it has a vibration that's different than me. If I could attune myself to the vibration of this stand, and this is out there, but it's the truth, I could walk right through it. This is how people walk through walls. This is how people, you know, many, many years ago, I didn't know any of what I'm talking about right now, nothing. But my husband and I, we were really into this. We understood that the mind and the body were connected. And we thought we were just phenomenal because, quite frankly, nobody else in medicine did. We were sort of in another realm. This is before, no, this had to be after. This was after I met Swami Satchitananda and had this, really, really, the masters just came and got me and said, wake up, honey. We're here and we're going to show you. And that's a whole other thing that's not relevant to this class. Then I moved up here and I was in Stanford Medical School. And while I was up here in Stanford Medical School, my husband Barry and I met a woman who used to come up here once a month for 3 or 4 days, Filipino woman with her husband. They would set up shop in a little place in Redwood City. Now, mind you, I was at Stanford Medical School. I was like considering myself seriously normal, usual, average. I didn't know these things. I just didn't know. And yet I was being drawn somehow. It's just interesting. I mean, to me, it's interesting. You know, I'm sure your lives are interesting too. It's like, whoa, all this was happening totally aside from me. She would do psychic surgery. We watched her. I was there like this little thing, didn't know anything, you know, studying biochemistry and anatomy and physiology. And then, oh, by the way, on Thursday night, let's just go watch her put her hand right inside of somebody's abdomen and cure a cancer. That is very, very strange. But here's the thing. You start watching and seeing these things enough, and you realize that my ability to perceive things is not the limit of what there is to perceive, because I couldn't make any sense out of that. But she was so able to attune herself and a vibrational way to that person that there was no separation between her and that person. So now, in these next 35, 40 years, I've had so many experiences. I've watched so many things that everybody would call miracles, not just phenomenon like that, but watching people comfortably speak a language they don't know just in a moment. Whatever. You know, on Sunday, this past Sunday, I was sitting here. Some of you come to service know, those of us who are light bearers put on robes and we sit in the front of the church so that we can do this blessing later. And this past Sunday, Asha was going to give service. But she got up and she walked out. At the beginning, there's a lot of reading and chanting and other things that happen. And Asha walked back into the minister's room. I thought she just had to cough and she's mic'd. But I was watching her because I happened to be the person in the church who, under most circumstances, will take care of most things when they go wrong or there's an emergency, or I'm the manager of the church, I'm one of the light bearers. I'm, you know, just sort of have myself disseminated everywhere here. So I was watching her. She didn't come back. So I said to myself, I mean, 5 minutes past, 6 minutes, this is a true story. I said to myself, okay, what if she's just doesn't come back? Like, what if she got sick and she just can't come back? Shanti, you're going to get up there and you're going to give a sermon and you don't even know what the reading is today, you know? So I was listening to the reading and I had an inspiration. And it was an inspiration. But I'm telling you this to talk to you about energy. I want you to remember this. I said to myself, if she doesn't come back, I'm going to get up and I'm going to give a talk on how would life be different for us. These are the exact words I said to myself, honest to God. How would life be different for us if we decided to really see everything we have in our lives? Now, mind you, we're speaking to people who are making spiritual effort. We're not just sitting back wanting to gather huge bunches of material things or hurt people, or to see what we have in our lives as perfect and embrace it and see what we could learn from it. How could we grow? What if we decided to imagine that everything in our life is exactly as it should be? 2 minutes later, she walks out and she stands up, and that's the talk she gave. That is exactly the talk she gave. For those of you who are here, listen to it again if you don't remember. She talked about, now, how could that be? How could that be? It wasn't like from the reading. It was an inspiration because, as Master said, thoughts are universally, not individually, rooted. It means that when we're calm, when we've just meditated, when we're in our center, when we're focused at the point between our eyebrows, we have access because we're vibrating. You know, we're out of this duality. Oh, my God, what am I going to talk about, dear Lord, if I have to get up there? No. Master, you tell me, what will I talk about if I have to get up and give a sermon? It's not easy to get up and give a sermon that's being broadcast around the world when you don't even know what you're supposed to be talking about. It's just simply not. And, I mean, it wouldn't be for me, let me put it that way, like in that moment. And yet somehow, with perfect calmness and clarity, it came to me the same thing that had come to Asha. I'm not saying we gave, you know, we would have used the same words, but it didn't matter. Because when we work in ways to refine, when we know that we're nothing but energy, and all energy has both a vibration to it, which is exactly what Connie was saying, and that we begin to let ourselves believe that the limits of what we can perceive is not the limits of all there is to perceive, but that things are happening that we just can't see yet because we haven't refined ourselves enough. And that as soon as we can, that we will be able to know. So Connie was trying to show you pictures of that energy. And she was saying whether we know it in our minds or not, we are in every instant of our lives being affected by every instant of everybody else's life, by where the sun is, by where the moon is, by what colors you're all wearing, whether you're smiling at me right now, whether you're making good eye contact with me, or whether you're looking like what I'm saying is making no sense. Everything, and it's not just human feedback. That's why she talked about color. That's why she talked about sound. That's why we talk about getting a feeling in our gut when we meet people. That's why we instantly say, dear Lord, what is that person doing in those bright green pants? You know, because it's affecting us every single, I want to say thing, but you see, it's not things. Because here's the other thing, thoughts. And this is, you remember the first quote Connie put up there? I want that quote. I'm not going to be able to quote it, but what Einstein said in the end, he said, everything is energy. This is a quote, I remember. He said, that's all there is to it. Like, get clear about it. Everything is energy. And at the end of that quote, he said, this is not philosophy. This is physics. This is Einstein saying. Einstein also said, the illusion that we are separate from anything is an optical delusion of our consciousness. Trying to say, when you calm down. There's no way to do this, by the way, except meditation. There is no way. You can't think your way here. You can't analyze your way here. You can't rationalize your way here. You can't get logical answers. Even though, as teachers, we're trying to appeal to your logic to get you to keep coming back, but that's not ultimately what transforms us. So all of the brilliant things that Einstein and Ralph Waldo Emerson and William Blake in his poetry, and, you know, you could just go on and on. You know, Mahatma Gandhi, anybody, of all the brilliant things that they said, it's not going to be what it is that allows us to be well. The only thing that will allow us to be well is when we consistently and repeatedly put ourselves in a position to more and more finally attune ourselves to something that is beyond mind, something that we can never logically know or figure out. You know, those things, psychic surgery now and watching people be able to speak languages they can't speak, or walking into a room and having some spiritual teacher say to me, answer a question that I haven't voiced out loud, which happens a lot and has happened in my life a lot. I mean, I could just list Many of you have heard me tell many stories, medical stories. They're miracles. Knowing things that I couldn't possibly have known, intervening right at a moment where somebody's life gets saved. It had nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with me other than that I was being used as a channel. You know, I tell these stories all the time because they're perfect examples of a real live human being, sort of with, you know, a big personality and, you know, a pain in the rear end at times, and just like we all are, who has these things happen as a way of saying, this is what's possible. And all we need to do is begin to believe that it's possible, begin to understand that the energy is what is being made manifest. It's exactly backwards from how we all think of it. That's why those Curlian photography pictures of the leaves are so compelling. You have a leaf, you photograph it, you cut half the leaf away, the whole energy of the leaf is still there. Nothing happens at the energetic level until if we try and affect it physically. You see, nothing can happen until we affect it energetically. And that's what we're trying to get to figure out how to be well, how to feel more uplifted, how to be more expansive, is to learn to plug into energy, learn how. How many of you in this room have taken meditation too here? You're taking it, yeah. So, good. Just a couple of people have not. But in that, when we learn the energization exercises, which is what meditation too is about, they're brilliant. And Paramahansa Yogananda devised these in the early 1900s. It was literally, as Swamiji says, a main contribution to the science of yoga. Because he gave us a way with these bodies, since we're all here and since we all have to operate on the physical plane. And of course we do. And the better we get at it, the better off we are. So we have to learn. We don't touch things that are hot. We don't walk out and walk in front of a car. We start paying more and more attention to our intuition in a silly little way. I was just talking to Heidi, who had misread whatever she read online. She thought the class started at 7, but she comes from Oakland. So she was over here to avoid traffic for hours, just looking for things to do. Something in her was saying, I should go to the church, I should go to the church. But in this instance, she just didn't pay attention. But it's always there if we learn to pay attention. And it's not some magic. Why would we want to do it? Why do we care about what colors we put on our body? Why do we care about that at all? Why do we care about sounds around us, what music we play in our house, the company that we keep? Why do we care? We care because that energy is having a huge impact on us all the time. You know, I've been on a spiritual path consciously, thoughtfully, on a spiritual path since I was 25 years old. I came in as a practicing Orthodox Jewish little girl, insisting everybody around me do that. So I was looking for God. I mean, right from the get-go. I didn't know that, though. I wasn't really conscious about it. I wasn't all that inquisitive or bright as a child. I really wasn't. But clearly, that was my reality. Anyway, so this is a long time for me. And I can see that I've made a lot of spiritual progress. And those of you who know me know, I mean, I do what we do in our community. I meditate a lot of hours during the day. Really, my whole life is Ananda in one way or another. It's just all, and Ananda is my spiritual path. That's all of what it's about. But a month ago, I took a vacation that I've been taking every year for 25 years with two girlfriends. We go down to Mexico. Where we go has changed because Mexico's changed so much, but we're always looking for that undiscovered beach, the quiet, the calm. So far, we've still been able to find it, but we're running out of space soon. We're going to have to go to Belize in a few years. But anyway, we're on that beach. I was there. I only stayed there 4 days. But I was aware, and I wake up every morning, meditate for 2 hours, then take a walk for an hour and a half by myself. And I would say to myself, make this a walking meditation, Shanti, which is not something I do. But just trying to stay conscious. It's in a place called Tulum, in case any of you know where that is. Tulum has now become the town, the area itself, one of the 15 most highly visited places in the world. So it's active, but we're in this little hideaway. But by the time I was ready to leave there, I was completely and totally clear that my consciousness had been changed in ways that I did not like, even though it was a deeply relaxing vacation. But no matter how hard I was trying, and I've been trying for a lot of years, no matter how much focus and energy I brought to it, and every night meditating. You know, my friends knew I meditated for an hour before dinner, meditated before I went to bed, and it was very quiet there. But Mexico, it's just a different energy. There's a lot of sensuality in these Latin countries, and a lot of the music's different that you hear coming through the air. Well, it just pulls you. It just takes you. You cannot help it if you're not a master. So that everything we do in our lives makes a huge difference. Every choice that we make, if it's unconscious, so be it. This is how people say, I don't know how that happened. I just found myself there. You know, the common phrase that I hear, but used to hear a lot when people would come to me pregnant, not wanting to be, I don't know, it was weird, I just found myself in bed with him. What do you mean you just found yourself? You know, it's like, how could that happen? No, that's what we call unconsciousness, right? Literally. And wellness means exactly the opposite. It means getting conscious. It means living consciously. You know, I'm telling myself, I'm so embarrassed. I said to myself when I left the house this morning, and it was cold, and I put on these tights and this. Many of you know I almost always wear white because I've taken vows that say to wear white. And I, 90% of the time, I'm in something white. Then I never made it back to change clothes today. And as I'm walking in here, I'm thinking, dear Lord, I'm going to be talking to these people about color, and I'm in this army green and black. This is wrong. But you know, it's a very interesting experiment, because you can ask yourself as you look around, not in this room, not right now, we don't want to make anybody paranoid, certainly don't make me paranoid. You know, how are you affected by colors that people wear? Or, you know, it took me years to start noticing people whose foreheads are permanently grooved, as opposed to, honestly, a lot of the yogis who I spend my life around who are not very flat. So people are always like this, always trying to think and worry and figure things out. And, you know, I mean, I look at a lot of my friends now, and it's just remarkable to me, you know, where the way people carry themselves, who presents heart first, and how does that affect you? How does it make you feel? What would happen if you started taking time to listen to yourself? To just take time, instead of moving by habit or spontaneously into what we do. I have to rush here. I have to do that. I always eat this. I don't do that. What if we stopped and just allowed ourselves to have an experience of what's going on? I know many, many years ago, I was 28 years old. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was living in a house in a town called Leucadia, which is right next door to Encinitas. It's the next little, I mean, it's, you know, like if you take the next step, you're in Encinitas. I was drawn there. Master just wanted me. I didn't know anything about Master. But I mean, whatever I was doing in Leucadia, California. But we owned a home there. And I was sitting having coffee one morning. And I know some of you have heard this, but I was drinking this coffee and it was cold. And I said to myself, I hate cold coffee. And then I said to myself, but you always let your coffee get cold. And this was just going on in my mind. Why do you do that? And then the thought came, you know, your mother loved cold coffee. She always intentionally let her coffee get cold. And then I had this horrible knowing that I had no idea who I was or what I really felt about anything. I realized this. It came to me in a flash. I was literally left me trembling that I had been living unconsciously all of my life until then. And so I promised myself, this was really insane. God love my husband. He let it go on for almost 3 months, that I would never answer a question in the world or make a decision about anything with anyone until I had thought about it for 2 minutes. Now, you try and relate to somebody who's thinking to everything you ask them, sitting there, 2 minutes. I mean, one day, finally, my husband said to me, you're done with this. If you don't know who you are right now, get over it. You're done. I mean, literally, it's what he said. But you know what? It was nuts. But it was an interesting kind of nuts. And it taught me a lesson. It did teach me to start allowing myself to feel things. How is this for me? How do I feel about a food, a person? Because what came to me that day is, how do you know how you feel about anything, Shanti? How do you know how you feel about relationships, marriage, certain foods you've always thought you liked or didn't like, or just anything? You can extrapolate it out into anything. We have to bring a kind of willpower to getting conscious. That's why these energization exercises, the whole point of them is to learn how to draw energy in through the medulla oblongata, which is, and we'll talk about this with the chakras, how all energy comes into our body, not the energy that just bombards us, but when we learn how to bring it in. On Monday night, we're having this meeting at my house every other Monday night for 9 months. It's called People Who Are Taking a Sadhaka Training. Doesn't really matter what it is, but there were 22 people in my little tiny house meditating, and I had plugged in one of these huge coffee urns. And I didn't realize that once the water gets warm, if it cools off again, it automatically starts itself. So in the middle of our meditation, this coffee, you know, that sound, and I was there, and it was my house, and of course I felt responsible, and I kept saying, just let it go, Shanti, just let it go. And later I made a joke about it, and Connie's husband, who was there and who's taking this class, said, I just heard it as om. It was so beautiful. I mean, it was exactly, so he wasn't going to be bombarded with anything. He drew it in and took it through the medulla, literally, to the point between his eyebrows, and let it be the sound of om. It was such a beautiful solution. So these energization exercises say, here's what you do. You're in a sea of energy. There is nothing but energy. Let's learn how to draw that energy in, experience it, and place it where you want it. So it teaches us. We go through almost every muscle of the body, tensing, relaxing. And it says, tense with will. This is what Yogananda wrote. Relax and feel. Tense with will, a thigh, relax and feel. And without knowing it, you do these energization exercises every day, hopefully, as you develop the habit. And soon, you become more and more and more aware of energy and how to use it and place it. And it's no longer a coffee machine. It's the sound of om. And it's no longer kids screaming. You learn how to, and annoying you outside. You literally learn. And you don't have to think it through this way all the time. You find yourself transcending it. You find yourself expanding into such a bigger space than you ever thought you were, because when you're thinking, you're limited by your mind. That space becomes so large that everything around you becomes small and smaller and smaller and minor in comparison. And then you can figure out, it's no different than playing tennis, where they say you're going to play tennis, you get your foot back, your one foot behind the other, you plant your feet where they belong, You get your racket back. You keep your eye on the ball the whole time. And guess what? When you hit that ball perfectly, you know it the minute it hits the racket. You don't even have to watch where the ball goes, right? It's called the sweet spot. You know it. But it comes by bringing great will, concentration, focus. So the line of masters, one of many, that's been quoted over and over because it's the truth. The greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. Now, many of us have heard that many times. But right now, let's let it in a different way. It's the truth. The greater the will, that means both our willpower, our dedication to something, our willingness to learn and grow, will in all of those ways, the greater the flow of energy. The more energy can just flow through us. The greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. It's the essence of those energization exercises. Not just being able to take energy, draw it in, and place it, yes, but to allow more energy to flow more freely. Now, energy is basically, all energy is magnetic, right? And everything that's magnetic has a positive and negative pole, right? That means all energy, which we are, we're speaking about it as if it's something else, as if we can quantify it and put it here and put it there. But we are it. We're living in it. You know, it's almost like if you took a drop of red food coloring and you dropped it into a bucket of water. Could you then get the red food coloring out? Of course not. It's just dispersed. It's one and the same. In essence, as hard as this is for our minds to hear it, that's who we are in this whole world. We're just a part of everything. I keep trying to find a way to say that, but I want it to make sense. So Master says, one part of this is will, willpower, willingness, the flow of energy, because increased flow in energy language has increased magnetism. It just does. We know that from electricity. You know, we know it from the things we know it about. If you take water and you let a lot of water run, isn't that in fact how we make electricity? It's the same exact thing with us. So we want energy flowing. We want to be one with all the energy. But then he says, none of this will serve you unless you develop awareness. And that really, in essence, is what we're trying to do. That was, the purpose behind Connie's whole slideshow, is to make us aware in all these different ways that we walk around unconscious. Let's get conscious. I know I just said this before, of color, of sound, of the food that we eat. When she said, and it was so brilliant, we don't just eat organic food because what? Because we think we don't like pesticides, or we think of it as being cleaner and it's nicer. It is something entirely other. If you eat what's organic, energetically, it doesn't look at all like regular farmed food that's been sprayed and somebody's been trying to kill the bugs on it, but not it. That's silly. That's why none of us want to take chemotherapy. Can chemotherapy only kill a cancer cell and no other cell? No, of course not. It's not that smart. So a lot of damage is done by chemotherapy. Now, if it happens to save your life, it's perfect. I'm not against chemotherapy, believe me. But we have to be aware. It's just out there. It's not operating with a consciousness. But we are. We are conscious beings. And so everything we're talking about here, we're talking about because energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can always be transformed. A physical law of the universe. So now Connie and I have spent all this time making this great argument to say it's all energy. Listen to how hopeful that is. That says we are nothing but energy, and energy can always be transformed. It is so powerful. We can become anything. We can do anything. We can transcend anything. We have enormous, unlimited, infinite power to get and have exactly what we think we want to be, do, have. And really, the bottom line for any one of us, no matter what form it takes, as Swamiji always said, there's two things that everybody has in common. We want to avoid pain and find love. Everybody. And here we're saying that since all energy can be transformed, and this is a leap of faith that we take here, that means that we can be, we can take who we are and transform ourselves literally into love. Not just love somebody. That's different. Connie showed you the eight attributes. Eight attributes mean the eight ways that divine energy manifests in this earth that's sort of measurable almost, or one can find it. Peace, calmness, sound, light, love, joy, wisdom. I think I forgot one, but the power.
Yeah.
How could I forget it? The third chakra, we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. But you see, when I did a seclusion about a year and a half ago, I did a month-long seclusion. And I developed a prayer there. I don't think I developed it. That's not a good wording. It came to me. I kept saying every morning when I would wake up, because it's so precious to create a month to be in seclusion. Everybody in this room probably knows how hard that would be. Everybody kept saying to me, oh, it's so great that you got a month. And I thought, what do they think? Like somebody handed me a month, took everything off of my plate? You know, I worked really hard because I knew a month would really be something. I could really go someplace that I wasn't going to be able to go in even a week of seclusion. But soon I found myself saying, let me be peace. I started out by saying, I'd like to be peaceful while I'm here. Peaceful, that's one thing. That's a feeling. It is an emotion. It's different to say, I'm going to be peace. You know, Socrates Socrates said, to know something is to be it. And there's so much wisdom and truth in that. So if we get to that place of knowing what divine love is, we are love. We are pure love. If we know peace, then we are peace. And in those states, when we talk about wellness, that's what we're talking about. Now, does anybody want to say anything or ask a question? Well, so I can only go back so far in that answer. Let me just say that honestly. It's a law of thermodynamics, but it came from one infinite source of energy, which is what we call God. And if you ask me where did God come from, that I can't answer. But if you just start with, and this is a very complicated issue. There are many people who can never find their way onto a spiritual path. I'll tell you this because, you know, we're very intellectual beings. It's part of the sadness of who we are and the extraordinary difficulty of getting to this place of pure love, pure peace, pure knowing, because the mind jumps in and it wants to have a rational explanation for everything. And of course, I understand that. You know, I don't happen to be an intellectual. It's not my forte or my calling. You know, I'm of average intelligence, but I'm not an intellectual. Fortunately, I came in this time as an intuitive being, so I don't get stuck with those questions. But I totally understand, and my heart actually aches for people who do, because the mind cannot answer that question. It's impossible. But I will tell you what I've been told by every great spiritual teacher I've ever seen, and what I know from every profound spiritual experience I've ever had. And that is, if we can move beyond the place. This isn't, I'm not chiding you for asking this question. I'm just taking the opportunity to answer it in a very big way. But I really do mean that. I mean, it's the question. It's that question, and if God knew we were going to suffer on this long journey to get back to him, why did he create us anyway? Those are the two big questions. Where did it all come from in the beginning? And why did he ever let us go if we were going to suffer? And from everything I know, which is little, whatever experiences I've had, which are few in terms of what I'm about to say, and from every person I've ever listened to who I somehow know to be telling me the truth. I felt that way about Swami Kriyananda. I feel that way when I read Master. For many years of my life, I had another spiritual teacher who I spent a lot of years in India with, and many other people that I've met in this journey that I just know they're telling me the truth. Whether I want to live it or not or whatever, that's all other stories. But I believe with the things they're telling me, I know that as I continue to meditate and have these expansive experiences, one day that question will disappear completely because I'll be living in the truth of it all where you can't explain it with your mind, but you're living it and you just know it. And those are very, very, they're impossible to talk about because every time we speak, we're trying to appeal to somebody's logic. And Master himself said, I used to use this example all the time. It came to me years ago in my teaching, but only about 2 years ago I read Master used it too because it's, I mean, not too, but he used it first because it's so perfect. If you had never in your whole life tasted an orange, no matter how many times I tried to describe the taste of an orange to you, it would just be impossible. You can't say it's like or this. It's unique. An orange has its own unique flavor. From the minute you taste an orange, every time you taste anything orange after that, you know this is orange. But you can't, there are certain things on this path, any spiritual path, I don't mean the path of self-realization only. We simply cannot know other than by having the experience of it. And the only other thing I would say, because I think what I felt about Connie's talk, and maybe nobody else felt it, is that, boy, that would really be a stretch for a lot of people, some of what she was talking about. And also because I'm sitting around and looking at a room full of people I don't know, and I don't know, you just wandered in off the streets from where, what's your history? Have you been meditating? Do you know all this anyway? Or is this whole language new? So, you know, here I am. We put this class together. I feel a little responsibility that you at least feel we're speaking the same language. I didn't know as I was listening to her because what she was talking was profound and outside of the realm of the way we usually think about things. It just simply was. Somebody tells you that you can cut a leaf in half, you can trample it, you can crumble it up, you can do whatever you want with it. You're not touching its energy. And if the energy just stays there, it'll just form another leaf. I mean, it's just what will happen. It'll recreate itself because energy will manifest that way. It has to happen. Well, we don't usually think about that. You know, we don't usually think that if we want to try and cure an illness or calm a feeling or transform in some way, that we can start wearing a blue scarf around our neck and it will change us, that it will allow us to speak about things that we've never been able to speak about, to speak the truth, to find ourselves in a way that we can express ourselves. We don't have to think about that. We don't have to work hard to get there. Just start wearing a blue scarf around your neck. You know, or things like that. Who thinks like that? It's, I mean, most of us just don't. But it doesn't make it any less true. So we're working here. We're seriously outside of the box. So what I want to say is we certain things, we just have to have the experience. Not only do we then know it to be true, we no longer have a question about it. Not because we know it to be true, but because being there dissipates the very question of it. You know, when I have a I'm an internist and I have a subspecialty in the field of chemical dependency. So I've worked with addicts and alcoholics a lot in my life. And addicts and alcoholics happen to be, they probably have the highest incidence of people who are abused as children of anybody. And in many ways, how they have learned to cope. This is not exclusively the cause of the disease by any means, but there's a high percentage of addicts and alcoholics who have been abused in some ways. And that I used to only work in this field, in the Sequoia Hospital in Redwood City. My husband and I created a chemical dependency, the chemical dependency program there. I mean, it was a big part of my life. And I would be working with people who had been badly abused, stories that I will not tell here. I've quit telling them long ago because they're unbearable, what one human being can do to another. And I used to, initially, when I first got into it, I would say to them, look, if you can just do this, if you can let us in, if you can practice this or do the 12 steps or whatever it was, you know, you will be able to have love in your life. Imagine you'd be able to have love. This is how I used to talk. I mean, much more than what I'm saying. And it was real and it was sincere. And I think the very love that I felt for people allowed them to heal. But it took me a long time to realize they had no idea what I was talking about. They had never experienced love. It was nothing more than another word. What did happen, because I just was who I was, that was a blessing for me, for them, but I genuinely loved them, one person at a time. Literally, I felt that way about all of the clients that I've been privileged to see now over all of these years. So my words didn't mean anything, but by the time they had gone through what was in those days a three-month program, they had an experience of love, and it just transformed them. And it was so profound, but there were no words in the world, there were no examples, no stories, no nothing I could tell them that would take them there, just having the experience. So that was a 20-minute answer to a... He said because everything's energy, then it had to be created. But again, he's going back to the very beginning of how anything ever came into being. And I don't have the answer. You know, several times, there is a place in the autobiography of the yogi where Master speaks to what happens when this question gets asked. But I don't have the answer right here, and I have to mark it next time. And I'm not sure that who could, I mean, you're not even really asking a question. You're making a statement. You just think it's a belief. And what I do agree with you is that, you know, you could call anything a belief, but here's the challenge that I'll give you then. Because who cares about a belief? As Swami always said, people believed the world was flat. They believed a lot of things. None of it turns out to be truth. We have to find truth. So what I would say is, if you begin a serious practice, anybody, I'm not just speaking to you, of meditation, and you meditate regularly, that there's a very good chance that you will be able to move from belief to knowing. And but it's a scientific experiment that each of us can do, but we can only do it inside of ourselves. And there's no logic. There's no way. We could talk about this for a long time, but it wouldn't change anything, because there's nothing I could say to you that would have you believe that it's anything other than a belief. So, but what I will say is what I said before about the way Connie's able to practice medicine, which, by the way, is brilliantly and with a lot of intuition, and she's remarkable. So I'm saying this, and this happens to be the truth, but it by no means demeans what it means to have a brilliant, intuitive lady practicing naturopathic medicine. Not all naturopaths are created equal, and she's one of a kind. But like naturopathy in the hands of somebody who's good, it will not do harm. It really follows, who's the father of medicine hundreds of years ago? Hippocrates. First of all, do no harm. That's one of the first things we learn in medical school. Hippocrates said, first of all, do no harm. Well, boy, have we found ways to do some harm in medicine. Well-intentioned, it may be, but a lot of harm. But not in naturopathic medicine. Also, not with these teachings. So if you meditate, 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 and you don't get to samadhi this lifetime, you don't get to that place where you know what all of energy is, what is super consciousness? We use the word. Well, you're certainly not going to get hurt along the way doing little chanting, coming to classes like this, listening to, you know, listening to the talk, spending time with other like-spirited beings who are positive and uplifted. I mean, if everything we say just sounds like gobbledygook, then people just quit coming. But if there's anything that's resonating, that's drawing people back, then you can't get harmed here. And I think that's really a very meaningful thing. Catherine? What about the people who are filled with hate, or the people who are killing other people, or the people who are, you know, bombing places, or who? Well, we are, because we're all, every one of us in this room, I can say, without exception, is still living in this state of duality, separate from that energy that created us. Sometimes I think through thought and vibration. So the purpose of our lives is to, you know, I just want to look up one thing here. There's a book that Master wrote, and I want to, oh, because one of the, he didn't write this book, but there's a series of three volumes where people have transcribed his talks, and one of them is called Man's Eternal Quest. Yeah. And so it's funny, I've read every talk in that book, many of them many times, but only today did that title hit me, Man's Eternal Quest, which is really, again, as I said now, over an hour ago, the purpose of this life is to really find our way back, not to some external thing that is God, but to that divine center within ourselves. We are all part of that one big energy. We're just mostly living out at the periphery, trying to come back in from the outside, following a spoke of a wheel, which we call millions of lifetimes, back to that center, back to the hub, back to that one place. I mean, Master's analogy, or Swami's analogy, is a pilot light. And you can look at a gas burner, and there's a lot of flames like this, but they all are being fed by that one light. And I think that's a good image for who we are. But as long as we're in these bodies still on that journey, the soul's long journey, then, yeah, we have downward pulling, negative pulling. We get jealous. We get greedy. We get judgmental. We gossip. There's many, many things that we could, many words we could use about that. You know, I mean, it's the whole. You know, in a way, they're not. In a way, it's not separate. This is. It's a. The essence is the separate, which is unity versus duality. Wherever there's duality, there's going to be some negative energy. And depending on how far away from the source you are, it's almost as simple as that, then you're being affected more and more by these negative pulls, by, you know, a lack of balance in our lower chakras is really what it is. So as you'll see when we talk about chakras, you know, the very same chakra that can give us the power to do anything, to become anything, to have fiery self-determination, it's called, can also create tyrants and the Holocaust and many Holocausts and just a little out of balance. And there you have it. So it really is about refining energy. And in that place of perfect stillness, which is what love is. No, there's nothing pulling you out or away. All of your energy is in and up and at the point between the eyebrows. If you are, this doesn't mean like you just love somebody, human, like the human aspect of love. That's just how we get to practice, in a way, to understand truly unconditional, pure, divine love. Very different. Although we can try our hardest, and we should all be trying our hardest, to approximate that here. Many people find that more with their children than anything, particularly when the kids are little, because they haven't yet become problems. So it's really easy to unconditionally love a 9-month-old. It just is, you know. I mean, although I've heard parents come in, literally come in terrified because they got so mad at their screaming nine-month-old that they actually had a fantasy about strangling them. I mean, healthy, normal people, you know. But as a rule, I mean, it really is true, but it's a practice. You know, I guess he's my stepson, but, well, my partner's son, they had a baby like 7 or 8 months ago, and she was adorable, and she really was a sort of cute baby. And I have pictures of her in my office. She would often sit like this from the time, you know, she was like born. It was amazing. And they would take pictures and say, look, Shanti, she's meditating. She's learning how to meditate. And I would say, she's not learning how to meditate. She came in meditating. She's unfortunately moving towards forgetting. But anyway, they sent me a picture last week. And, you know, she's down there and she's looking up at them. And she just does happen to really be a very pretty baby. She's got these huge eyes. And I looked at that picture, and there was so much love in that picture, that little girl. Neither of the parents were in it. And I immediately emailed them back, and I said, did you ever in your whole life imagine before Solana is her name, before Solana, that you could love anybody or anything this much? And of course the answer is no. Neither of them ever knew love like that. So we get to practice. Some of us get what we consider a perfect mate, but quite frankly, not many. That's pretty darn rare. Much better to practice with your children and a much more of a sure thing. And it's just simply the truth. Probably everybody in this room knows it. Most of us have not seen these marriages that are 60 years long and they've loved each other every minute of their whole life. There are some, but rare. So, yeah, we're just here and we get to practice, and you know, our job is not to get too hard on ourselves when we don't make it, but just keep looking to the light. Keep looking to the light. Don't get lost with either your mistakes or your questions or your doubts. As long as you're on the path, stay on the path. The most extraordinary thing I ever heard Master say is a room could be in darkness for thousands of years, but the instant you turn on a light, the darkness disappears. And if you think about it, he doesn't say what's obvious. I mean, he implies you can't argue with the light. You can't with the darkness. You can't get too rational and analyze, why are you here, darkness? How did you get dark? I really wish you would go away. I don't want to be in the darkness anymore. Darn it, I'm really mad at you. Quit being dark. Come on, let's talk about this. What's the purpose of being dark? None of that works. All the ways that we live our life as human beings, you cannot get out of the darkness, but you find the light switch, you turn it on, and it's light. And it's such an extraordinary analogy. Our job in life is to look for the light switches and to quit, or help ourselves, I should say, just keep ourselves moving away from all those tendencies that want to keep us here. Because if we think we have to stay here until we get the right answer, or until we convince our partners that they need to be different, or until we get the 3 perfect children who go to the 3 perfect schools who do, you know, guess what? We get to keep coming back. You know, the more we think that what's going to make us happy is having more of what we already have, the more stuck we are. Swamiji said, transformation, he says, you cannot suppress or imagine delusion away. You have to truly release it by raising or releasing energy. And you can't, there's a quote here that I'm going to take just 1 minute. There's a book that I read in my life many, many, many times called Callings. And it's a book that was written by a man whose name is Greg Lavoie. And there's just so many brilliant quotes in there. And I just want to try and find one for you, and I'll end with that. But let me just see if maybe I didn't bring it in these. Darn it. It's so brilliant. If I didn't bring it, I'm going to bring it and tell you. I could have sworn that it was in here, but it must be in another set of
notes that I looked through today. But basically, see, what's so clever about him is he finds the fewest number of words to say this. But he's saying, you know, God and our soul, one and the same, really, know the truth. And you can't fool them by just sort of, I forget how he puts it, but by smiling and saying, cheese. You know, we just can't put it on like that, which is really what Swamiji's saying here, where he says you can't suppress or imagine delusion away. You have to literally transform, and then it's gone. But it's the only way, is to begin to start living consciously, is really what we're talking about. That is how to be truly well. Just start living consciously. The answer is so simple that we can hardly focus on it. We can hardly grasp what it means. But it's just a practice. It's just every day coming back, remembering again, oh yeah, wait a minute, to pay attention to myself. Why am I having that nagging that I should be doing this or going here? Let me listen. Let me learn to be still and listen. Be still and know that I am. Wellness exists in that place of deep intuition, pure love, pure peace, absolute knowing that we are one with all there is. That is really what wellness is. See, I love what you're saying, of course, because it's such a valuable, we will get as the class goes on to tools, but that is certainly one of the main ones. Just pay attention. Does this make me feel better or worse? Because for you, who is clearly somebody who's been on a spiritual path probably many lifetimes, it's listening to, you know, you could be playing a CD of Om in the background in your home, or you live in spiritual community. For somebody else, what might make them feel better is, you know, starting a business that serves people or working in a soup kitchen once a week. But the point is not the what we're doing, but what we're doing, is it opening our hearts? Does it have us feel better? Does it have us feel like, yes, I'm right where I am supposed to be? Is this my next step on the spiritual path? And that what you're saying about that is so real and important. Pay attention. Ask yourself, does this make my chest feel tight? Does this give me a stomach ache? Or does this make me feel calm? And do I feel safe here? Do I feel trusting? So we're just plugging in, not to the specific, you know, because if people's energy is too tamasic and you try and sit them down and say, now listen to spiritually, listen to inspired music, oh my God, it drives them crazy. It took me a long time to know that I kept wanting to say to friends or my husband for the longest time, no, 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 honey, listen to this, do this, sit still, listen to this music. Well, it's just horrible for them because it's not where their energy is. What is our next step? Self-knowing, self-awareness, and then being willing to say, what's the next step on my spiritual path? This whole path, this whole journey to wellness, it's directional. You know, wellness is a journey. It's not a destination. It is a destination, but it's every step of the journey is wellness. I don't know how else, it's not saying that well. It's a journey, and it's a path that we're on. And as long as we're taking our next step on the path, then we're taking ourselves towards that place of living well. And we each have to decide where we are and take our next step, not anybody else's.